Session number 26582, Roy Hole, Reel 1.
Could you give me your full name and date of birth, please?
My name is Roy Ingram Hole, H-O-L-E. I was born 9/6/1924.
And what was your rank on leaving the service?
Craftsman.
And what dates did you serve?
1944 to 1947.
And what was your Remy trade?
Telecoms mechanic.
Was there any experience in the family prior to your enlistment? In military experience?
Military. My father was in the Flying Corps during the First World War.
And so you served during the Second World War. Did you have any prior anticipation to joining up? What did you think about having to join up?
Well, I volunteered in 1942 when I was 18 for aircrew, and I failed the interview, and I was lost for 2 years. The records were lost for 2 years. So it wasn't until I received a nice little postcard in June, I think it would be, 1944, saying, please fill in my rank number and all the rest of it, which I obviously couldn't do because I wasn't in. And within 2 weeks, I was in.
So
my thoughts, well, you know, I had volunteered, so I was willing to go.
So were you, because you'd volunteered but it had gone wrong, did they consider you as a conscriptee, or did they still consider you as a volunteer?
No, I was conscripted.
Mm-hmm. And type of unit, was REMI your choice, or were you directed into REMI?
No, I had great difficulty. I was only had an elementary education, no matric or grammar school, and to try and persuade the officer who was interviewing me after the 6 weeks square bashing, so to speak, and I'd always had a big interest in electrics, and I managed to persuade him that I wanted to, you know, follow that trade if possible. So I sort of finished up in Rumi.
And what were the reactions of your family and friends when you joined up?
No, I just expected it. Couldn't understand why I wasn't already there.
Yeah. So you said you wanted to join the RAF to begin with. Did you have any resentment at having to join the RAF?
No. Well, I would have liked to go into the RAF, obviously, but...
And you didn't consider ground crew, or you weren't offered ground
crew? I wasn't offered, no.
Okay, so when you joined the army, what was your reception at REMI like? Where did you have to go?
Well, I did my 6 weeks square bashing at Fort George in Inverness, and then I went to some holding place somewhere or other, I can't remember where it was. And then I went on a course at, I went to Woolwich. I went from the 6 weeks at Fort George to Woolwich. There was a holding battalion there. And it was a time of buzz bombs and goodness knows what, and quite exciting, being close to London. And then I went to Wandsworth Technical College, which was Civilian Technical College, for the 5 months initial training.
Mm. So what was training like? Firstly, your square bashing, and then your technical training.
What was it like? Well, I was mummy's boy, and to go to Fort George, Inverness, and do 6 weeks. It was hard, but oh, it's okay. Soon hardened up, you know.
What was the discipline like?
Oh, wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad, really. I recall there in the hut that I was in, there were probably about 30, 40 of us, and there was a sergeant and a corporal. And they used to run these scams at the weekend, you know. The corporal couldn't go home because he hadn't got enough money, and could we have a whip round and all this sort of thing. So, you know, it wasn't too extreme, really. I mean, it was hard, obviously, the breaking in of the boots and sore fingers with the buttons. You know, back from PE sort of thing, and then put your either your battle dress or denim fatigues or whatever. I can't remember these things these days. And it was all new buttons and buttonholes, and fingers were terrible.
What was the accommodation like?
Pretty grim. Huts.
Food?
Food, yeah, it seemed to be all right, as far as I remember. Yeah.
So, what was your trade training like?
Trade training was very good. Thoroughly enjoyed it because I was mad keen to do it anyway. And we had civilian instructors. We lived on the south side of Clapham Common in sort of three-story house with a basement. And we were supposed to march in the mornings from the house to Wandsworth Tech, and as soon as we got across the road and into the park and into the trees, everybody disappeared because it was dark in the mornings. It was winter time, and we used to catch buses there. Is this the sort of thing you want? I mean, I can shut up, you know, and just give you the bare facts if you want. And the training was good, yeah, very good. I enjoyed that. Of course, I could get home every weekend as well. So that was...
How did you actually train? What did you train on?
Oh, it was theory, radio theory, transmitter receivers and so on. Just basic radio theory at that stage, yeah.
So which trades were actually available to you?
Well, they weren't available. That was it. Telecoms. Presumably they were, you know, very short at that time of those particular trades.
So after your training, how long did you spend training, and after your training, where did you go?
at Wandsworth, it was something like 5 months. And then I went to another holding battalion somewhere and waited to go to Gopsall Hall, of which your colleague had heard.
And what did you do there?
Oh, on equipment. That was equipment training there.
And what equipment did you train on?
Oh, dear. It's a backpack set. Does that mean anything to you? I think it was 18. And 19 sets, which were the sets in, you've got one in the museum there, which was a set that was installed in tanks.
And when you finished there, where did you go and what did you do?
I was posted to Greenford in Middlesex. To an ordnance depot, and that was really the only place that my 8 or 9 months training came into action, and I used it, used the training, and that's for 2 months only. Sorry, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And I'd spent 9 months training.
So what were you actually doing there?
Repairing transmitter receivers, whatever they might have been. I can't remember the number now. And I was sent on an upgrading course, having done 2 weeks actual workshop experience. I then went on an upgrading course to one or whatever it is it grade one or class one or whatever it was. And that was back to Copsall Hall again, which is a delightful place.
What was the accommodation there like?
Well, the accommodation had been, they'd originally wanted it used for prisoners of war, and they thought it wasn't up to standard for the prisoners of war, so they decided they'd base a Rimi, I think it was a radar and radio courses there.
What was morale like? Knowing this?
Pretty horrible. It was in the middle of nowhere. I had to run and catch a train called the Shackerston Flyer on a Saturday morning. And that took you into Nuneaton and then the main line. And I used to come home most weekends, except when I went AWOL and... Then of course I was confined to barracks for a couple of weeks and so on.
Like?
Scrubbing the chapel floor, I seem to remember. Yes.
Why did you go AWOL?
What's the usual thing? It's young ladies, isn't it? Yes. But
So you didn't really enjoy yourself there then?
No, I enjoyed the course, but the actual place was rather grim. But we had fun. I still play saxophone, and right from the time I went in from the very first day up to Fort George, they spotted me with my saxophone case, and I played that evening that I arrived in Fort George, and I seemed to play throughout the whole time that I was in the army, actually, wherever I went.
So I
made my own enjoyment, really.
So that must have been quite popular then. What was
dances mainly. Yeah. Village halls and hotels and officers' messes and sergeants' messes and so on.
But that wasn't a
camp band. That was just a group of people getting together, civilians and service people mainly.
So you had a good social life then.
Oh yes, yeah.
And
also you could supplement your food, you see, because. Intervals of the dances, there was always food, and so you stacked it in the saxophone case to take back to the barracks.
I should think you were popular.
Yes. Yeah.
So, what did you do when you'd finished training? Where was your first?
Well, as I say, I went to Greenford.
What did you do?
It was just the 2 weeks that I used my knowledge of, 9 months' knowledge that I acquired, and at the end of the 2 weeks, I went on this upgrading course, and then when I came back from that, I went on draft for overseas, and I went to Kenya. On 45,000 ton liner The Île-de-France, old Île-de-France, not the new. I think there have been two Île-de-Frances since then, which had been fitted out in America, and had also recently, the trip before we boarded it, they'd been to America and back, and all the food on board was all American food, and so it was wonderful. The accommodation was great because you could look after the American forces, didn't you? I mean, when I came back, we were in a scruffy sort of tramp steamer almost, with what they call mess decks, which you probably know were just hammocks hung over the tables where you had your meals, and that was awful. But this ship was great.
What was morale and discipline like on the ships?
You weren't supposed to. It was a time when there were a lot of civilians. This was 1945 now. There were a lot of civilians sort of going back to the colonies. So there were a lot of South African officers being repatriated, and we called in Cape Town. And they all disappeared back to their homes and so on. Had a day in Cape Town, which was very pleasant. And then we went on up to Mombasa. And there were a lot of British colonial people who were going back to their coffee farms and all that sort of thing. And so we weren't supposed to fraternise with these people, and they were first class, and we were steerage sort of thing. But we got—I got friendly with a family, and was invited to their coffee plantation and so on and so forth. When we got to, we landed at Mombasa, and then we took the overnight train to Nairobi, and I was. There were only about 10 or 12 of us in the draft, and we were about 10, 15 miles outside Nairobi. And even though we'd had our inoculations for this, that and the other, yellow fever, black fever, this and so on, there was one chap died within about 10 days of us being out there. He contracted something and gone.
So what's it generally like out in Kenya?
Oh, excellent. Because I played, I was playing in hotels and did the governor's ball and shows in the theatres and all that sort of thing. So I mean, my life there consisted of late nights and sort of laying in the mornings, because there wasn't a workshop where I was, and we were destined for Burma, and this was just a stopover, sort of acclimatization base, and they didn't want us in Burma because war was over, 45. And so they gave me a job looking after an African soldier's canteen.
So you didn't actually use your technical skills?
Oh, no, nothing at all. and we used to go and get the supplies in the local warehouses, food warehouses and drink warehouses, and used to, the African soldiers used to make their own beer called Wembe, and we used to go and get the wheat or whatever, and the yeast and so on for them to brew this horrible beer.
What's food like in general?
Food was good. We were well looked after. I was only a craftsman, but I had a boy. I sort of paid him about 30 bob a month, something like that. He used to wake us up with a cup of tea, get our clothes ready.
What was pay like in general?
Our pay was poor, but because I played, I was earning a lot of money and I was sending a lot of money home. I was playing every night of the week and I earned a lot of money. I was married at this time. I married before I went to Kenya.
What sort of money would you be earning for a night's gig?
I can't remember out there at all. But I mean, here it was about 15 bob. But
What was your pay?
How much? Pay? I can't remember. 2 bob? Half crown? Whatever? I just can't remember. So, I'm doing very well and eating well.
So how long were you in Kenya?
I was there about a year. Unfortunately, I'd hope to see my time out there. But no, very good experience. But the thing that, if I hadn't been playing, the colonials out there, the Brits, they treated soldiers, the British soldiers, just as no better really than the local Africans. But because we played, because we were doing the clubs and the hotels and governor's ball and all the rest of it, you know, we were fated more or less.
So you basically didn't do any technical sort of stuff?
No technical work at all. No, none whatsoever. Yeah.
So what did you do after Kenya then? Where did you go?
I was on leave, for the first leave that I had, when a group of us went down to just above Mombasa on the equator, and a friend of mine was a pianist in band, was recalled because his mother was ill, and I was recalled for no particular reason at all. So I didn't see my leave out, and came back on a boat called the Near Helles, NEAHELLAS, and it was as near Helles you could get. It was a shocking boat. It was an old Greek boat, which had been converted to a troop ship.
And what was?
The interesting thing was that in Kenya that. There was the Abyssinian War, and there'd been a lot of prisoners of war, Italian prisoners of war, that had been captured and put into POW camps in Kenya. And among these people was a symphony orchestra, a complete symphony orchestra. And when you talk about the attitude of the colonials out there, the Brits. When these people left, they came back on the boat that we went back on. And they were, each of them in this symphony orchestra were given gold watches by the local civilian population. It's amazing. Anyway, these poor chaps, am I going on too long? Sure. You said the record was 3 hours. These chaps had been in Kenya, they'd been captured. I mean, they'd been away from home since, 36, 37, 38. And here we were in 1945, 40, 46 by now. And they'd been away all this time. And they used to work mainly in the offices on the camps and so on. It's quite the thing. Nice people, lovely people.
So you got on well with them then?
Oh, yes, yeah. And then we came through the Suez Canal and went to drop them off in Naples. And Naples Harbour was just just consisted of all you could see. You couldn't see the boats that had been sunk. You could just see the masts sticking out of the water in the harbours.
Did you get into the harbour easily?
Yeah, I suppose. They sort of cleared the channel through and, yeah.
Did you actually get off in their boat yourself?
No, we weren't allowed off, no. No.
So what did you do when you got back to the UK?
Not very much. I think I was posted to Slough and I lived in Maidenhead. It was very convenient, wasn't it? Sleeping out pass. And then I was telling your colleague I just went to several small units. One at Coolsden, which he hadn't heard of.
Which unit was that?
I can't tell you the. It was just a small unit that was in the. Might just recollect it being in the woods. You know, there was no vast camp, didn't appear to be a vast camp at all. And they were closing this place down, and we'd be just packing up, boxes of valves and spare condensers, resistors and all that sort of thing, packing things up, and just they were being shipped out. And I wasn't there long. Then I went to a place called Brackley, which is in Northampton, which is fairly close to Silverstone. Grand Prix circuit.
This was 1946.
This would be 46 now, I should think. Yeah. And then, embarkation leave, and then I went into Germany. Went from Hull to Bremerhaven or somewhere. And then to just outside Dortmund to, I think it was called the 5th Infantry Battalion Workshops. You'll be able to find it out, I expect. But I believe that was its title. And even though there was a workshop there, it was staffed by Germans, and there was only an officer, and a staff sergeant and a corporal and myself. And the staff sergeant and the officer never seemed to be there. And I was interested in amateur radio at the time, so I built myself a transmitter, and there was a receiver there, and I used to workshop used to practically run itself, and used to sit there from about 8 in the morning until 11, 12 at night on ham radio.
So what were you actually there to do, officially?
Well, I suppose oversee the work and so on. We used to go out in the Z wagon and maintain the hospital train and go out to odd groups, bringing their sets back for repair and so on. But just had a good time, really.
How did you get on with the locals?
Very well. I mean, they're very subservient. We had a place called Annenwitten, Witten, and that was about 6 or 7 miles outside Dortmund. And when we went into Dortmund, it was horrific. The roads had been cleared, but there were just banks of rubble that had been stacked up from the buildings, from the bombing. Because, Dortmund's in the Ruhr and, really taken a pasting.
So you could still see all the bomb damage?
Oh, yes. My son goes there now, and to Dortmund, and he reckons that you can still see a lot of the bomb damage now, results of it. But and then from Germany, I went into Belgium, and I was in Brussels.
And
for a few weeks, months, and there obviously only one in a very small workshop, and I was repairing the embassy domestic radios and things. That was very pleasant because Brussels was unaffected by the war, and there was plenty of food, and the shops were beautiful, and
what was
very
discipline
good.
Like?
Hmm?
What was discipline like there?
None. Mm-hmm. No. This workshop was in a very modern at that time exhibition building, which was at the top of a beautiful beautiful drive. Treed drive in double carriageways in and out, and we were billeted in a lodge. I suppose there'd been a big estate there at one time, but we were billeted in this lodge, and there were just Belgian civilians, ladies that did the cooking and cleaning, and it was like living at home, really. Yeah. The only time, you probably think to yourself, well, didn't I see any action? The only time I got anywhere near anything that went bang was when we were at Woolwich, waiting to after the 6 weeks.